All glory is the sum of devotees. All glory is the sum of devotees. All glory is the sum of devotees. Amangana Timurandasya Ganagana Salakaya Chakshuran Militanena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So today we're going to be reading from First Canto, chapter 13. Verse 41. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narada Vacha. Ma Kanchana Shucho Vachan. Yadishvara Visham Jagat. Loka Sapalaya Seme. Bhanti Balam Ishitu. Sasam Yunakti Bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Narada vacha. Makanchana shucho rajan. Yadishwara vasam jagat. Loka sapalaya seme. Vahanti balam ishitu. Sasamyanukti bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Makanchana sucho vachan. Yadishvara samjagat. Loka sapala yasteme. Vahanti balamishitu. Sasamyunakti bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Makanchana shucho vachan. Yadishvara vasam jagat. Loka sapala yasteme. Vahanti balamishitu. Sasamyunakti bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Makanchana shucho vachan. Yadishvara vasam jagat. Loka sapala yasteme. Vahanti balamishitu. Sasamyunakti bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Makanchana shucho vachan. Yadishvara vasam jagat. Loka sapala yasteme. Vahanti balamishitu. Sasamyunakti bhutani. Sa eva vyunakti cha. Narada vacha. Narada said, Ma, never. Kanchana, by all means. Shucha, do you lament? Rajan, O king, yet because Ishwara Vasam, under the control of the Supreme Lord, Jagat, world, Loka, all living beings, Sapala, including their leaders, Yasya, whose, Ime, all these. Vahanti, do bear. Balim, means of worship. Ishitu, for being protected. Sa, he. Samyunakti, gets together. Bhutani, all living beings. Sa, he. Eva, also. Vyunakti, disperses. Cha, and. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Shri Narada said, O pious king, do not lament for anyone, for everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all living beings and their leaders carry on worship to be well protected. It is he only who brings them together and disperses them. Shri Narada said, please repeat.
Srinarada said,
O pious king, do not lament for anyone.
For everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord.
Therefore, all living beings and their leaders
carry on worship to be well protected.
It is he only who brings them together and disperses them.
Report by Srila Prabhupada. Every living being, either in this material world or in the spiritual world, is under the control of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Beginning from Brahmaji, the leader of this universe, down to the insignificant ant, all are abiding by the order of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the constitutional position of the living being is subordination under the control of the Lord. The foolish living being, especially man, artificially rebels against the law of the Supreme and thus becomes chastised as an asura or lawbreaker. A living being is placed in a particular position by the order of the Supreme Lord, and he is again shifted from that place by the order of the Supreme Lord or his authorized agents. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Maharaj Yudhisthira, or in modern history, Napoleon, Akbar, Alexander, Gandhi, Subhash, and Nehru, all are servants of the Lord, and they are placed in and removed from their respective positions by the supreme will of the Lord. None of them is independent. Even though such a man or leaders rebel so as not to recognize the supremacy of the Lord, they are put under still more rigorous laws of the material world by different miseries. Only the foolish man, therefore, says that there is no God. Maharaj Yudhisthira was being convinced of this naked truth because he was greatly overwhelmed by the sudden departure of his old uncles and aunt. Maharaj Yudhisthira was placed in that position according to his past deeds. He had already suffered or enjoyed the benefits accrued to him in the past, but due to his good luck, somehow or other, he had a good younger brother, Vidura, and by his instruction, he left to achieve salvation by closing all accounts in the material world. Ordinarily, one cannot change the course of one's due happiness and distress by plan. Everyone has to accept them as they come under the subtle arrangement of Kala, or invincible time. There is no use trying to counteract them. The best thing is, therefore, that one should endeavor to achieve salvation. And this prerogative is given only in man, to man, because of his developed condition of mental activities and intelligence. Only for man are there different Veda constructions for attainment of salvation during the human form of existence. One who misuses this opportunity of advanced intelligence is verily condemned and put into different types of miseries, either in this present life or in the future. That is the way the Supreme controls everyone. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here we have a situation with Dhritarashtra, who is leaving the palace, and King Yudhisthira is lamenting. If we look back at, you know, Dhritarashtra's life, he was one of two sons and was to inherit the kingdom, but because he was born blind, he was disqualified. And so his younger brother, Pandu, he became the king. And this was difficult for Dhritarashtra. But as fate would have it, Pandu, being a Kshatriya, he was hunting in the forest, and there was two deers that were attempting to mate, and he shot them. And he heard a human voice, and one of the deer begins to speak to him, saying, you know, you've killed us, you know, in this act. So it turns out that these two deer, they were great sages who were trying to have a child, but because they were so used to penances and austerities, they were unable to arouse the passion that it takes, you know, to have a child. So Pandu was grief-stricken. He was like, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. He said, I didn't know. He goes, well, you didn't know we were sages, but still, it's a sin to kill anyone, even animals, in this act, so I can't forgive you. And as a result, the next time you try to mate, you are also going to meet the same fate. You're going to die. So, and that's what happened. Even though Pandu went back, he told his two wives that what happened. They all went to the forest to perform austerities and sacrifices. And for years, that worked for them. And then one day, he became overcome with passion, and exactly the same thing happened to him, where he, you know, he died in the act. So because the children of Pandu were young, King Yudhisthira and, you know, Arjuna, all the brothers were young, Dhritarashtra was put interim in charge of the kingdom with the counselors Vidura and Bhishma, you know, giving them advice on how to run the kingdom. And they were great advisors. You know, Vidura and Bhishma were great advisors. So as time went on, Dhritarashtra became very attached to the position. You know, he liked being the king. And he started thinking, you know, by all rights, I should be the king. I was the oldest one, and my son should inherit the kingdom. So he started coming up with ways that he could, you know, keep his position. So there was the dice game. Everybody knows about the dice game, and the Pandavas lost, and they lost everything, their wife, you know, their property. So many people thought this was quite unfair, and so they were given a condition. Well, if you go to the forest for 14 years, and you're able to survive that, and then the last year you go incognito, no one recognizes you, then we'll give you some of your kingdom back. So all that happened. You know, they were able to survive all that time. Even, you know, they were princes and princesses, but still, they did what they had to do. They were able to survive, and even the year incognito. But Duryodhan said, no, it deals off because they came out early. But Bhishma said, no, that's not true. They fulfilled all the requirement, but still, they wouldn't give them what they were due. And so, as a result, you know, there was the war, and, you know, the Pandavas completely defeated the Kauravas, and Dhritarashtra lost all his sons, all his property. You know, he lost everything. But Yudhisthira took him in into the palace, and he was, even though he was the biggest loser, you know, he was quite satisfied just sitting in the palace and being fed wonderful foods, and even Yudhisthira still calls him the king, even though Yudhisthira won the war. He's the king. He's kind of, pacifies Dhritarashtra by calling him the king. So this is a very unfortunate situation. I mean, it didn't bother Yudhisthira, but it really bothered Vidura, because he thought, you know, it was so pitiful, you know, that this warrior was taking the position of being, as he called, a palace dog, you know, just living at the expense of his enemies, who were initially his enemies. So Vidura goes to him, and he says to him, you know, look, you don't have long left. What are you doing? You know, these were your enemies, and now you're just, you know, living at their expense like a dog. You need to go to the forest and practice austerities. So, amazingly, Dhritarashtra took it to heart, and Prabhupada says, because Dhritarashtra had a younger brother who was merciful, who was compassionate, and who was so learned and knowledgeable, he was able to help his brother, his older brother Dhritarashtra. So we see this situation with devotees. You know, devotees they have so much knowledge, and they have so much determination, that they are able to help people out of some very difficult situations. Dhritarashtra, one lecture I was listening to, said that he was not able to, he practiced yoga and he definitely went to a higher planet. He was not able to go back to Godhead because of the offenses that he had committed against the Pandavas. They were so grave, and Krishna was not happy with the way he behaved in trying to favor his sons. In fact, Prabhupada says that Dhritarashtra, here he was, what was the words he used for? There was one Dhritarashtra in this palace. It goes, but in Kali Yuga, there's a Dhritarashtra in every home, you know? So I was thinking about how this attachment to children and what it can do, you know? You see it all the time. Years ago, I remember there was this story of these two women who were daughters who were skaters. They were competing against each other. And so one mother decided she'd take it into her own hands, and she hired someone to go with a hammer and discreetly, if you can do anything like that discreetly, hit the other girl in the knee so it would knock her out of the competition. And she did it. Of course, she got caught and all of that. But, you know, you think, what are they thinking? So this is a disease that's perpetuated down the years. Even very recently, I read an article where a woman, her daughter, tried out for the cheerleading team, and she didn't make it. So she conceived of a plan. You know, she hired someone to hack into these the other cheerleaders' computers. And it was a very high standard they had for these cheerleaders. They had to have a moral standard, and they had to have an academic standard. You know, they couldn't like drink or anything like that. So she was able to, they were able to take the pictures. It was a special program. I can't remember the name, but you can do it. But putting these girls in compromising positions and having them, you know, showing them drinking and doing all kinds of crazy things. So she thought that way they would be kicked out. And it would give her daughter room to move into the cheerleading team. But the one girl, she went to her mother and she said, "Mom, you know, look at this." And she said, "This is not me. These pictures aren't me." So she got involved in it, and they were able to hire somebody who was able to find out exactly what happened. Of course, this woman ended up going to jail. So, you know, many people following Dhritarashtra's example with this loyalty, you know, even though Duryodhana, when Duryodhana was born, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari were warned because there's so many ill omens. You know, donkeys were braying, you know, pus is raining from the sky. They were like, the sages were like, "Whoa, this child can be the ruination. You know, you should just let him go. You know, let him die." But they were attached to their new little baby, and they couldn't listen. And so everything played out as it played out. So King Yudhisthira, though, Prabhupada says, like devotees, they have a soft heart, just like Arjuna. You know, even though so many wrongs had been done, he was compassionate to his fellow relatives who were on the other side of the battlefield. And Prabhupada said that's because Vaishnavas, they have a soft heart, you know. So Yudhisthira also had a soft heart. He didn't kick his uncle and aunt out of the kingdom. He took them in and took care of them. He's even lamenting that they're gone. So because they're lamenting, who comes on the scene but Narada Muni? Because that is what Narada Muni does. You know, he universally travels all over the universe, just trying to counsel people and give them spiritual advice to help them to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's able to preach to Yudhisthira, explain it to him. Guess what? You're the king. But you're actually not the controller, you know, that Krishna's the one who brings people together and disperses them. So even though you're taking responsibility for your aunt and uncle leading the palace, this is not because of you. So you should just let it go. So Narada Muni is able to give, you know, such wonderful advice on so many different occasions. And of course, Prabhupada in the purport, he's so strongly advising us to take advantage of this human birth, that we're all going to face the same situation. He gets some wonderful analogies. One of them is, he said that if you're in a compartment of a train, and you've got like luxury plus compartment. I mean, it's beautiful. It's got the pillows, you know, the soft bed. You can have whatever you want, you know, curd sabji and puris and gulab jamuns and, you know, music piped in and whatever you want. The compartment is like perfect. But when you open the curtains the next morning, you're in the same place. You haven't moved. So he said that's a situation in modern civilization, that they making the body as comfortable as possible, but no one's making any advancements spiritually. So consequently, people are extremely unhappy. They're not satisfied. No matter what they have, it's impossible to be happy. There's one verse that I love. Nastir buddhir ayuktasya shayuktasya bharata, where Bhagavad Gita is saying that one who's not connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can have neither transcendental intelligence or a controlled mind. And without that,
What question of, is there of peace? There's no question of peace. Without peace, there's no question of happiness. So here you have the majority of the population who are, they don't have a controlled mind, they don't have transcendental intelligence. They're trying to become happy by fixing one thing after the other, but it's impossible to fix. It's like whack-a-mole, you know, whack-a-mole, you knock down one and it comes up another place. So that's how it is, you know, like you always think, I mean, I've been guilty of it myself, thinking only if this, and then everything will be okay, but then no, something else isn't okay, right? It just never ends. It's not supposed to end, because if it did end, we'd be very happy to rot away here in the material world for, you know, as long as we could. But Krishna's always giving those warnings, you know, of what to do. And you know, the Narada Munis and the Viduras and Srila Prabhupada, they take great pains to come to this world and show us, you know, show us the way. Just like King Chitraketu, he was a king. He had all the empresses you would ever want. He had 100 wives. So what could be the problem? What could be the problem for King Chitraketu? What was the problem? He didn't have a child. So no matter what else is going right, he's just thinking there's no one to pass on the throne. He's miserable, so he goes out of his way. You know, sage comes. Sage says, well, I can tell that something's wrong, even though everything looks great. What is it? I can't have a son. So the sage is able to prepare some special sweet rice, give it to his wife. She becomes pregnant. What could be better than that? She has a son. Oh my gosh, the whole palace is like so happy, except the co-wives aren't happy, because the king is only paying attention to the wife that had the child. He's neglecting the other one. So they become so distraught, they poison the child, and the child dies. And King Chitraketu and his wife are beyond grief-stricken. You know, they explains it that King Chitraketu, he can hardly walk. You know, he can hardly think. He can hardly talk. He's like so much lamenting. He just wants to die. So Narada Muni explains, I had forgotten this somehow, but Narada Muni, he's Sri Kalagya, that whenever somebody is suffering or someone begins to think, I really want to take devotional service seriously, immediately Narada Muni is on the scene, you know. He comes, so he becomes aware that King Chitraketu is suffering so much. So he comes there with Angiri Rishi, and they preach to him. And the story, you know the story where the son actually comes back to life for a time, and he's like, oh, my son, why have you left? You know, I'm your father. And he goes, well, which father are you? You know, they had so many lives, you know, like, who are you? So he's brought back to, he regains his transcendental intelligence. So he's able to understand the situation, and he's able to go on with his life. So Narottam Das, in one of his songs, he sings Tadera Charana Seva Bhakti Shani Vas, that I just want to worship the lotus feet of the six Goswamis in the association of devotees. And Lord Chaitanya says he'd rather live in a pit of tigers than live outside the association of devotees. And there were so many letters when I was reading about this, where Prabhupada is giving advice to devotees who may want to leave for one reason or another, they can't get along. And Prabhupada said, you know, it may be a small inconvenience living in the association of devotees. And when you look back over the years, it may be more than a small inconvenience. It may be a big inconvenience of some of the experiences that you've had. But still, someone mentioned one time that, you know, in order to go back home to God, you got to get purified. And we're always around devotees, so guess how we're going to get purified? We're going to get purified oftentimes through each other, different situations, different testy situations. So the idea is that we develop the, you know, the patience and the determination to be able to, you know, traverse this path and to go back home, back to Godhead. There's another story where Narada Muni comes on the scene. I love this story. It's Dhruva Maharaj, where Dhruva Maharaj is the son of a king, and the king has two wives, Saruchi and Suniti. And so Dhruva Maharaj is in the palace, and his stepbrother, Uttama, is
he's getting up on the lap of his father. And so Dhruva, he wants to get up on the lap of his father too, so he's trying to crawl up, and the king is welcoming him enough, but then the stepwife, Saruchi, says, "Oh no, you're the son of the king, that's true, but you're not allowed to get up on his lap, because only my son can get on the king's lap." And because the king was controlled by his favorite wife, Saruchi, he didn't feel able to say anything or do anything. So you can imagine, it says that Dhruva felt like he was struck by a snake. He was like so insulted. And he's got this Kshatriya spirit, you know, of a warrior. So he ran back to his mother. And other people in the palace were also explaining to his mother, Suniti, what had happened. And Suniti, her eyes are full of tears. She started to cry. She was so upset. And she said, "Yes, Dhruva, it's true." And the stepmother said to Dhruva, "If you want to get on his lap, you need to worship the Supreme Person of Godhead. Take another birth in my womb, and then you can imagine the audacity of somebody saying that," but that's what she said. So when Suruchi heard this, she said, "Actually, your stepmother's right." She said, "King doesn't care about me at all. I'm not even a maidservant. He just totally disregards me. So I can't help you, but she's right. What you should do is worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the only solution." So they both gave fabulous advice. So Dhruva sets out, just a little boy, he's like 5 or 6 years old. He sets off and he starts to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narada Muni, Trikalagya, he hears about it, and he comes and he gives counsel to Dhruva. He starts out with like, "Now, Dhruva, why get so upset over just a little? It's just words. It's not really that. It's not that big of a deal. You don't have to pay attention. You don't have to pay attention to it. Just ignore it." But Dhruva says, "You know, I'm a Kshatriya. I can't ignore it. This is so painful to me. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to worship the Supreme Personality of God." And so Narada, he touches Dhruva, and Dhruva is given the intelligence and the power to perform his worship. And the worship was very stringent. It's like, I forget, at first he was just eating leaves and fruit, and then leaves, and then only, you know, every other day, and then not eating anything, only drinking water, and then, you know, the next month he wasn't even drinking water, he was just breathing the air, and he became so powerful due to his austerities. It says that at one point, with his toe, he could touch the universe and he could move it, just like if an elephant gets on a boat and the boat starts to totter, that when Dhruva, with his toe, touched the earth, it also began to tremble, and the demigods were all like alarmed and like, "What's going on?" That's how powerful Dhruva was. And the irony is that here Dhruva couldn't get on the lap of his father, but now he's got control of the whole universe, you know? So that's what it can do to worship the Supreme Personal Godhead. So I thought of the verse, "Akamasarva kamava moksha karma dara dekuti bhena bhakti yoga najajeta purusham param." Whatever you want. I mean, ideally is that we worship for pure love of God, for Krishna prema. That is our goal. But sometimes, you know, people feel the need to pray for something else. And the point is made that don't go worship the demigods. If you need, just like Dhruva, if you need to do something, you go straight to Krishna. And ultimately, it says in the Bhagavatam that, you know, the four principles of religiosity and economic development, sense gratification, liberation, whatever you're able to glean from these four principles, you can easily get from worshiping the Supreme Person of Godhead. So sometimes people think, oh, you know, especially relatives, you know, you know, like I went to college and I, you know, taught school for a few years, and then I was like, wow, you know, is this life? This isn't going to work for me, you know? It's like there's got to be something more. So then my parents kind of lamented, wow, you know, we put her through college, and she had a degree, and she had a great job, and she was making lots of money, and now what? But Prabhupada was saying that that by becoming a devotee, it's not that like you're going to get less than you're going to get. You always get exactly what you're supposed to get, no matter what. But as a devotee, you get even more. So here we have Dhruva, you know, so powerful, meditating, and he sees in his heart, he's able to see Krishna, the all beauty of Krishna. But at one point it disappears and he's upset. He's like, oh my gosh, and he opens his eyes and there's Krishna standing right in front of him. So he was such a successful yogi that he was able to perfect this, even at such a young age, just by worshiping the Supreme Personality of God. In the meantime, Dhruva's father, the king, he's completely ashamed, you know, of his actions, and he doesn't know where Dhruva is, so he's lamenting like, what have I done? You know, I've turned away my young son. I remember his face is like a lotus flower. What can I do to get him back? So he can't do anything. He can't even rule the kingdom. So Narada Muni gets word of that and he immediately goes to the king and says, don't worry about your son at all. You're king. You're going to become famous, not because you're a king, but you're going to become famous because of your son. And he's totally protected by the Supreme Personality of God. You don't have to worry about him at all. So in one sense, you know, as parents, as devotees, we can gain great solace that because of worshiping Krishna, that Krishna will take care of so many things that we may worry about. That should be our primary goal, you know, is taking care of Krishna. When we take care of Krishna, he takes care of everything else. So, Narada Muni, Tamahar mentioned yesterday also, Magari the Hunter, that, of course, Magari the Hunter, generally people are in a situation of really wanting to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but with Magari, it doesn't look like that was the case. But so the pure devotee is so merciful that sometimes he just spreads his mercy around to everyone, whether or not they're, especially those who are deserving, but even to those who are undeserving, like Prabhupada came, you know, the acharyas come and they, you know, they're able to give this mercy, give this association. And what's the word? Shemam Arda? That even a half a moment's association. Shana Arda. A half a moment's association is enough to bring one back home, back to Godhead. A half a moment. So we have so many moments of association with each other, with our lordships, with Srila Prabhupada's books, with all the videos, with all the lectures. So our destination is pretty much guaranteed as long as we're able to follow the process. Like, you know, it starts out with a little bit of faith, a little bit of Shraddha. You know, for me, I was friends with Mukhya before we became devotees. So we were all our friends. We had a circle of friends. So we were all interested in yoga and spiritual life and studying. And I had gone to South America, and you know, I was very interested in the yogis there. And when I came back, she gave me a Bhagavad Gita. So I read it. I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many unanswered questions. So from there, I went to the temple. So that's Shraddha. Many of us started our spiritual life, getting a book or meeting a devotee or getting some prasadam. Even prasadam can be the very beginning. And then from Shraddha comes sadhu sangha, where we start associating with devotees. And I just love the devotees. I couldn't do enough for them, you know. They were just the coolest people I ever met, you know. So determined, so blissful, so happy, and so merciful. And so from there becomes bhajan kriya, you know, engaging in devotional service regularly, whatever it might be. When I first started visiting the temple, I would bring bushel baskets, you know, of fruit and whatever, nuts. And I just bring things to the temple. And Detroit temple was two stories, so sometimes they'd be hanging out of the second story, like, here she comes, I wonder what she's going to bring. It's so much fun to being able to serve the devotees that way. And after Bhajana Kriya associating, you're also involved in Anartha Nirvritti, where you're giving up bad habits. So that's one thing that's very important in becoming a devotee, is you have to give up the association of worldly people Because otherwise, you got the gas on and you got the brakes on at the same time. You're not really going anywhere. It's okay when you're strong enough to give your association to people, to worldly people, but not if you're not strong enough. So, you know, and then after that, you develop nishtha. You develop your steadiness in your devotional service. You know, like in Jagannath Puri, I've heard that people, they have the same service, like, year after year, generation after generation. Is that true, Maharaj? Yes. And sometimes they even have to go to court. There's like some conflict, like, no, that's my service, no, that's my service. They go to court to establish whose service it usually is. So, and that's pretty nishtha, you know, that's pretty steady. And in the next stage is ruchi, where you really have a taste. So they have so much of a taste for their service, they can't give it up. They don't want to give it up. And then from there comes bhava. We're developing love for God. And then finally, prema, you know, Krishna prema, true love of God. So Prabhupada gives so many wonderful analogies. One of them, he says that devotional service is like a mango, like you pick a green mango. Material desires, but you keep on performing the devotional service, and pretty soon it becomes ripe, and you develop the nishi, you develop the ruchi, and then Prabhupada says, ultimately, you're performing the same service in the spiritual world. So when yajat vampi smaram bhavat, yajat janti klevaram, whatever state of mind you have when you leave your body, that's the state you attain. So when you leave your body and you're meditating on your service and on the devotees, you're going straight back home, back to Godhead. So that's why we have the association that we have. That's why Prabhupada created the temples, and that's why Prabhupada really emphasized how important it was. Prabhupada mentions five anchors, chains that anchor us to material consciousness. So the first one is obviously our material body. That's a pretty big anchor, right? And the second one is our kinsmen, our children, our parents, all of that. Doesn't mean we ignore them or don't take care of them, but we always have to, you know, keep our priorities. And then the third one is, you know, property, things that we own, you know, our bank balance, you know, our accounts, you know, all of that. And the fourth one, he said, is material science. You know, that putting faith in material science and that, maybe not really believing the scriptures where it explains things that are different than material science in terms of rotations and all of that. And there were devotees who couldn't handle when Prabhupada said, you know, they didn't really go to the moon. They don't have the qualification to go to the moon. Even if they went to the moon, they wouldn't be able to see the inhabitants on the moon because they don't have the qualification for it. So that's another anchor. And the last anchor he said was religion rituals. You know, rituals and worship that is not connected with the Supreme Person of Godhead. I think there's a verse in the Act of Instruction that also supports that, that when you're performing something for the sake of performing it, not for the goal of love of God. So these are, all these things, you know, can propel us to really appreciate and take shelter of the association of devotees and to help us be merciful enough to give our association to others. You know, even within this community, sometimes, I mean, there's so many young devotees and there's so many, I mean, I have to say that I'm so impressed with Nandini Kishori because I see how she is so merciful. Like she's come up with this ingenious plan. You know, she has a very nice home, but she's put her home up for Airbnb. So these people rent her home, and she's got all these kind of, guess what kind of books she has on the shelves? All books about Krishna consciousness, and she brings prasadam to these people. So they become so enamored, you know, with with Krishna consciousness just through her association. And she's always bringing somebody new to the temple, somebody that she meets, and cultivate, and giving her, she's merciful enough to give her time and give her association. So many of you do that. I'm just, you know, using that as an example because I see her so often really being so generous, you know, generous with her time. So that is what Prabhupada did, you know, at a very elderly age. He came and he, even though he had nothing, he had $7 in his pocket, he had nothing, but he had everything. And he had all the time in the world to sit down and talk with, you know, hippies that came in, to give class and to perform all these austerities out of love for Krishna's devotees who were just now coming. You know, they weren't devotees yet. But Prabhupada also being Sri Kalagya, he knew. He could see what's going to happen because he said when he sat on a bench talking with an older man, and the man was curious about his dress, where he was from and all of that, and what he was doing here. And Prabhupada said, I have so many temples here, so many farms, so many schools, so many restaurants. But he'd just gotten there. He'd only been there for maybe, I don't know, a few months. But he said, it's just time that's separating us. So, and that's mentioned in the purport too, time, you know. So time, it goes so quick. Like, I was talking with Mukhya last night. We went to the program of the graduates, you know, the band of graduates, and we're saying, wow, you know, we've always heard that when you get older, time goes so fast, and really experience it. Like, wow, how could it be, you know, this month already? You know, how could it be summer already? It just goes by so fast, so before you know it. So just that gratefulness for the association of devotees, even when we experience some difficulty in the association of devotees, the best thing to do, I find the best thing to do is not to say anything immediately, to think about it at length, and then if there's something to say, you know, say it with a cool head, with the attitude of trying to, you know, create peace, and not to, like, I won the argument, because that doesn't generally create any peace. So, Bhakti Mamamajaniti, that only by devotional service can one understand the Supreme Presence of Godhead. And one understands the Supreme Presence of Godhead, then he can enter into the kingdom of God. So this hearing and chanting that we're experiencing every day, that's watering the Bhakti Lata Beach. You know, the Bhakti Lata Beach, the creeper devotion that goes all the way back to the Krishna's lotus feet. It's being watered by the hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada specifically mentions Srimad Bhagavatam class, Chaitanya Charitamrita class. So whether you hear it at the temple, whether you hear it at home, know that this is our life, and this is our blood. So I thought, if there anybody wants to mention, like, what it was that brought them to Krishna consciousness, what kind of association was it that brought you to seek the association of devotees? How did that happen for you? Or anything else you want to share? Any corrections, additions, subtractions? This is a good time to do it. If anybody has anything they'd like to add. Yes, Pangavinda.
I was wondering, because we mentioned probably at least 10 times last few weeks about Dhritarashtra not becoming pure devotee, mm-hmm. as disappointed his brother, or guru, or it's a guru. Because Vidura actually acted as a guru. Yes, bodily there is a relation, but... And then you also brought the reference of how Prabhupada mentioned Dhritarashtra nowadays in every house. Mm-hmm. And I was examining my own heart, maybe Dhritarashtra is here too. So then I was thinking, like, what I could do that Dhritarashtra failed. That Vidura... It's generally amongst us sometimes, this is also a family, we don't have enough respect for each other. Maybe we think like, that Mataji or that Prabhu, I know I'm not saying they are doing, maybe I was doing or maybe I still do, I don't know.
Mm.
That could put us in the same category, not advancing. I research even on the third canto, where Vidura is actually eternal associate. This Jamaraj is eternal associate, spoken by Maitreya Rishi. His eternal associate came as a Jamaraj, now he's a Vidura. I mean, what more you want? Just like Prabhupada, same. So he could have gotten the highest goal of life only because of his own. Yes, there is an offense to the Pandava. I'm not saying that. That may be a block, but what block is? I still have a free will. I like that Harishwari Prabhu was pounding that, how Prabhupada was always pressured that you have a free choice, free will is there. So if I was in that position, I would try to surrender to Vidura's feet and tell him to reveal what is the ultimate goal, not what I want to do, and get out and get the ultimate goal. I mean, what more guru you can have who is the eternal associate?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I feel like amongst us, like a lot of devotees don't want to progress because they think like, yeah, it's okay, just hanging around, just like Dhritarashtra did.
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada says that Dhritarashtra, he was very power hungry, very ambitious. So, I mean, we saw Prabhupada do so much, but he always, you know, the true spiritual master, he gives credit to the previous acharya. He doesn't take the credit, so that's helpful. And the other thing that can inspire us, I actually looked up the people that Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, Napoleon, you know, Prabhupada says Napoleon, he was such a great warrior, right? And he wanted to bring on a benevolent monarchy. But in the Battle of Waterloo, he was conquered. And Napoleon said, he said, with 14,000 less men, I could have defeated the other side. But I lost the battle, he said. It was due to fate. So he understood there was something greater than him, this fate. It was kind of an impersonal idea. But Prabhupada says, Napoleon, he was going to do so many things. But what could he do? Where is he now? You know. And I looked at each one of them like Akbar, who was also a great warrior. And he said, two-thirds of the subcontinent under his power. And said he never, there was Alexander the Great who never lost a battle. But anyway, Akbar died, he was like 32 of dysentery. And then Alexander the Great, he never lost a battle except the battle against death. And he died at 31 of malaria. So Prabhupada kept on bringing this up. And even Nehru, you know, Nehru who was, he ruled from like 1947 to 1964, I think it was. And he was a prime minister of India, and he kind of was a cop-out. You know, he kind of like was very accommodating to the English ways, but ultimately he had a stroke, he lost consciousness, and he never came back to consciousness. So Prabhupada said, there was an astrologer who said that Nehru was now a dog in Sweden. So he was talking about this at like a darshan, you know, and Guru Granth was saying to this woman, did you hear that? And she goes, well, I hope that didn't happen. And Prabhupada says, it doesn't matter how much you hope, he said, because knowing, it doesn't matter who you are. You're a famous celebrity, you're Bill Gates, or you're Jeff Bezos, or you cannot say what your next body is going to be. That's all from diving to train. That's from a higher authority that determines what your next body is going to be. So that's what Prabhupada mentioned, all those people, you know, Alexander the Great, Subhas Chandra Bose, Nehru, Napoleon, such great leaders, but where are they now? In an instant, they're gone. So that's our situation, that we're trying to understand that Krishna's, whatever position we're in, Krishna's put us in, whether it's a position of leadership or it's in a humble position. One sense, a humble position is better because you don't have the opportunity to be like, want more and more and more. Or, you know what I mean? You're just like, you just worship the Supreme Personal Godhead. Prabhupada's definition of success was that success is continuing the path of devotional service. what, you know, like the devotees, they were had a program somewhere in England, and hardly anybody came, so they were so disappointed. But Prabhupada said, you know, you don't have to be disappointed. First of all, you know, Narada Muni came and this person came. But second of all, when you're going through the actions of performing the devotional service, you're successful. You're already successful. If the material result isn't there, that doesn't really matter. You are still success. So by, you know, performing our devotional service regularly, we are all success stories. So that I find that very comforting, and I find it really levels the playing field also. It's not like this person has accomplished so much, he's so much better, and this person maybe hasn't. No, all the devotees, you know, there's no big devotees. You know, there's all devotees. We're all little devotees, we're all humble devotees, and we're all aspiring to go back home, back to Godhead.
That's a very nice, thank you. But you know, I was just thinking, like most of the, even amongst devotees, there are the bewilderment Arjuna had, that he has to act as a kshatriya, or he has to act as a kula dharma, duty for the family. And that this situation, even in the devotee, it's always will bewilder. But what pacified Arjuna, that when Krishna says, you are neither kshatriya or a pandava, you are a soul, and your duty is to serve the super soul. That's a fundamental identity. That should be focused. Otherwise, we will never be successful on the functional identity.
Jivaraswara Poya Krishna Nityadas, right?
Yes.
Every living entity is a
yes.
servant of
yes.
yes. Krishna.
That should be focused. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you for your kind attention. All right.
Yeah, I'm just a historian here. But Akbar lived to be like in the 60s, you know?
What did I say, 30?
Yeah, but he still died.
Good point. He still died. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it was Alexander the Great who died at 30 and Akbar died. Yeah. It was actually 10 days after his 64th birthday or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of cool though. He conquered all his enemies except death.
And it said that right on the Wikipedia, you know? He conquered every battle.
Somebody
except
said that.
Really? Oh, you know what else? You know what else about Akbar? I forgot to mention that it said that wild deer used to eat out of his hand, and he used to feed the pigeons, and he became a vegetarian, Akbar, because he didn't want his stomach to be a grave for animals. So I thought that was also very interesting about him. He what? Isn't that good? Yeah. 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 Yeah.